Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to talk about over the next hour. We'll be reacting to last night's game. Sheffield United won it by 1-0 against Arsenal at Bramall Lane. What are the repercussions for Unai Emery's side? How much negativity is there from Arsenal fans towards the manager? Also, huge credit to Chris Wilder's side for the start they've made to the Premier League season. We'll be looking ahead to tonight's Champions League games. Two English sides in action. Manchester City looking to make it 3 wins from 3 in their group against Atalanta. Tottenham in chaos at the moment. Can Mauricio Pochettino's side get their first win of the group stages at home against Red Star Belgrade tonight? So we'll be going into further detail about that Tottenham game and the situation they're currently in. We'll also be talking a little bit about Norwich later in the hour. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, share your views on whether your club was involved last night in that Sheffield United Arsenal game, or if your club is in Champions League action this week, Europa League action this week, or if you're just in the Premier League and you want to share your views, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We want to hear from you this afternoon. We'll start off by reacting to last night's game. It was the Monday night football in the Premier League, the final game of the weekend, even though Monday's not part of the weekend, but it finished Sheffield United 1, Arsenal 0 at Bramall Lane. Lys Moussa scored on his first Premier League start for the Blades just past the half-hour mark, and that was the only goal of the game, which gave the home side all 3 points. Sent Unai Emery's side packing with absolutely no points. Arsenal had the opportunity to go into third after last night's game, but they butchered that opportunity, and they rue yet another poor away performance. They're currently fifth. Sheffield United up to ninth. They're on 12 points, 9 games in. They're on as many points as Tottenham. They are 2 points ahead of Manchester United. A very good start for Chris Wilder. I'll be giving more credit to them in just a few moments' time. But it's only natural to start off by analysing the away side, Unai Emery's side, losing yet again away from home. They've won only 4 of their last 17 away Premier League games. In the 24 games away games under Unai Emery since he took over, they have taken just 30 points and kept just 2 clean sheets. That is nothing short of embarrassing. That's an appalling record for one of the big six to go through that poor and away record. It's not just the lack of points, the fact they only just average over 1 point per game. It's the fact they've only kept 2 clean sheets in 24. That is utterly appalling, and that just shows the shambles that is Arsenal's defence. And therefore, the big question that comes out of this, and it's not just a case of after last night's game, because that would just be an overreaction if you were just reacting to one game. But it's an accumulation over the time that Unai Emery has been there. Have things actually improved under Unai Emery from Arsene Wenger? I was quite critical of Unai Emery last season, but I gave him the saving grace that it was just his first season, and it is incredibly unfair to judge someone completely and wholly on their first season, because you look at the two managers at the top of the Premier League table at the moment. Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool, it took him a couple of years to get things going and to build what he wanted to. Pep Guardiola in his first season finished third in the Premier League. So it shows that it doesn't just happen overnight, and it isn't a case of you just quickly change things in one transfer window and suddenly the outlook looks very different. So there was that saving grace. I said last season that I didn't see any difference with Arsenal that they were a side that were very capable in attack. They'll create chances, they'll score fantastic individual goals, they'll score fantastic team goals, and at times they can look scintillating in attack. But defensively, they're so frail, they're so vulnerable, and they are there to be got at, in particular, away from home. Arsenal have a weak mentality. I know Granit Xhaka had some pretty strong comments on that after the game, but he was the one that admitted that at Watford, when they drew 2-2, having been 2-0 up, that they were scared. I mean, what do you want, Granit Xhaka? You're kind of changing your mind, that the hypocrisy there. You said one time, you contradicted yourself, that a matter of weeks ago, you said you were scared of a side that still hasn't won in the Premier League this season. And then you claim that after another defeat away from home last night, that you are not a weak side mentally away from home, where you quite clearly are. And we're now into Unai Emery's second season at Arsenal. And I think there are Arsenal fans turning on him and questioning whether he is the man to take them forward. Because I look at Arsenal at this moment in time, I don't think they are any better than under Wenger. If anything, you could suggest maybe they've gone slightly backwards since. And that must be extremely concerning for Arsenal fans. That run of away games where they are only just averaging a point a game away from home, 30 points in 24 games, is a shambles for a big six side, and only two clean sheets is appalling. Credit to Sheffield United, though, who continue to impress in the Premier League. They are taking on big sides and giving a good go. They came from 2-0 down away at Chelsea to draw 2-2. They lost 1-0 at home against Liverpool and pushed Liverpool quite far. Obviously, the Liverpool goal came from a Dean Henderson clanger, a real mistake from him. They've taken on some good sides and put up a good fight. They're not just kind of getting results and kind of scrapping by and got to 12 points after 9 games in a fortunate way. They fully deserve to be on the 12 points. And if anything, they could be on a few points more than that. And they've shown a real gritty determination. And when they scored that goal, they didn't completely shut up shop. They did create some chances. John Fleck had a good few opportunities in the second half, but they just defended with such great organisation, such great resilience. The back three of Basham, Egan and O'Connell just defended so astutely. You've got players like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, one of the best strikers in the Premier League, up against you. And they didn't really give away many opportunities. Arsenal can't say in that second half, when they were pushing for an equaliser, that they really created that many chances. It's why it surprises me that Unai Emery says that they were very unfortunate not to take anything from that game, that they were unfortunate to lose. Yes, as we'll go on to talk about, there may have been a few dubious decisions. But based on the performance and the game itself, I thought Sheffield United were good money for the 3 points. And Chris Wilder, who I think has done a phenomenal job at Northampton, then he took Sheffield United from League One into the Championship, then last season taking them from the Championship into the Premier League. And they are punching above their weight, but they are not, fortunately, jammily perhaps, getting over the line. They are deserving of these points. And they look like, at this moment in time, they will be fine the Premier League. The one concern that I would have for Sheffield United, they've only scored 8 goals in 9 games. And I look at them, they've got obviously Luis Musso, who scored last night, but he's not scored many Premier League goals in his career so far. Billy Sharp is a guy that, yes, will score a few goals, but isn't going to score you more than probably 5 or 6 goals in a season. Ollie McBurnie is unproven at this level. Callum Robinson, again, unproven at this level. That would be the one concern for Sheffield United, but they were fully deserving of those 3 points. However, a bit of controversy with two decisions. Bukayo Saka was booked in the first half for diving, and Sokratis didn't get a penalty. Now, with the Bukayo Saka booking, irrelevant to whether you think it's a penalty or not, it's not a dive, because there is contact. Now, whether that's enough to constitute a penalty, I'm not quite sure, but it isn't a dive. It is not a yellow card. And so I felt he was harshly done there. The more I see it, you need to see specific angles, I think, to get the best view. But I'm not convinced it's not a penalty. I think there's an argument to say it was. I think if it was your team, you'd be demanding that as a penalty. I don't think it was clear cut, and we go on to this thing about the threshold and whether there was enough to overturn the decision, but it most certainly wasn't a dive. And then with Sokratis being pulled by Egan, John Egan, again, I think that's probably a penalty. That if he doesn't pull his shirt back at the corner, Sokratis has a pretty good attempt of a header on goal. And I think that if you think back a few seasons ago, there was that game right at the beginning of the season where Manchester City played Stoke and they were really hot on that. And they had two or three penalties in that game for pulling and kind of yanking of jerseys in that game. And yet since, and they gave this directive that they weren't going to allow pulling and shoving in the penalty area, they're going to be hot on it. And ever since, they are very much the opposite. They're not really giving anything. A defender can really do as much as he wants to an attacker, but yet the other way around, the attacker has to be a lot more careful. So I think Arsenal were hard done by in some decisions, but I thought Sheffield United were fully deserving of the 3 points. Arsenal's away woes continue, and Sheffield United continue to impress in the Premier League. Looking ahead then to tonight's Champions League games, half of obviously the fixture tonight, half tomorrow, two English sides in action. Tomorrow night, Chelsea are up against Ajax, and Liverpool will play Genk. Tonight, two English sides in action. Manchester City will host Atalanta. The Italians are third in Serie A. It's their first season in the Champions League. Tottenham will play Red Star Belgrade. Obviously, these are the back-to-back fixtures. So teams will play the same opponent this week, home or away, and then in 2 weeks' time, the opposite to what they've done this week. Tottenham needing 3 points. They've only taken 1 point, that draw away at Olympiacos in the first game where they were 2-0 up and threw it away to draw 2-2. Smashed, annihilated by Bayern Munich, 7-2. They are in desperate need of 3 points tonight at home against Red Star Belgrade. Then Club Brugge take on Paris Saint-Germain, and the other game in that group, Galatasaray play Real Madrid. Olympiacos Bayern Munich is the other game in the Tottenham group, and Shakhtar Donetsk host Dinamo Zagreb. That's the other game in the Manchester City group. And then finally, Atletico Madrid take on Bayer Leverkusen, and Juventus play Lokomotiv Moscow. That is in Group D. So plenty of Champions League games going on tonight. We'll be talking about Tottenham in further detail later in the hour. We'll also be covering another Premier League side in the form of Norwich, currently second from bottom. Can they start to get a run of wins going? They play Manchester United on Sunday. But up next, we'll be continuing to look back at last night's game. Obviously, Sheffield United winning by 1-0. So we'll be talking about the Arsenal perspective next.
Love Sports.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to talk all things Arsenal now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Harry Simeon from the Chronicles of a Gooner podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Harry. It was the away woes for Arsenal continue after a 1-0 defeat at Sheffield United last night. It's only 4 wins in the last 17 away games. Was yesterday's game a case of Arsenal's soft underbelly coming to the fore yet again?
I think it was a case of Arsenal's lack of identity and lack of philosophy under Unai Emery, you know, coming to the forefront once again. I think the team selection left many people sort of scratching their heads. You know, understandable that Lacazette was left out, given he's been out for a while. I think most of us expected Rob Holding and Kieran Tierney to be in the defence. They weren't selected for whatever reason. You know, again, the Mesut Ozil thing continues to rumble on. Joe Willock, who played in that sort of number 10 position, was pretty poor, hooked before half time, which tells you all you need to know. And so lots of the same questions sort of coming up again. Poor defending, lack of creativity, all the things that we continue to see time and time again. And I think Arsenal fans are really getting frustrated now, because it's the same issues from week to week. And it doesn't look like Unai Emery has the first clue about how to address these things.
You mentioned Kieran Tierney and Rob Holding's names there. Do you think the reason why Unai Emery didn't start Kieran Tierney last night was easing him back in, or do you think he's had enough game time, a sufficient number of weeks back in training, that realistically he should be fit enough to start, and Arsenal need players like Tierney at the back if they're going to turn things around, especially away from home?
Well, I think you pick your best team from the beginning, and I think that, you know, when you look at the game time he's had quite a bit. He's had a lot of weeks training now. For me, if he's fit enough to be on the bench, then he should be playing. You know, if you turn around and said to me, you know, he's got a little bit of a niggle, he's not quite there, therefore we've left him out of the squad, I understand that more. But in this instance, you know, you've got them sitting there. And you look at Arsenal's bench last night, you look at it, Torreira, Holding, Tierney, Lacazette, Ceballos, it's better than the starting 11. And I just can't get my head around why he goes with the team he goes with. When you're not playing well, but you're grinding out results, people will put up with that and people will allow that to happen without really getting on your back too much. But the minute the results start going south, and the brand of football that we're seeing under Unai Emery at the moment is so dire, and it's not just last night. You know, we saw it against Bournemouth at home. We were really poor. And it just, it's an ongoing theme with Emery's team, and it doesn't look like he knows what his best starting 11 is. I mean, he was asked in the press conference yesterday what his best starting 11 was, and he turned around and said, he turned around and started talking about corners. And you're wondering if that, you know, that inability maybe to communicate, and, you know, I'm not criticising him for his English, because it is difficult to speak a second language, I get that. But back down and get yourself an interpreter, because that has got to be an issue on the pitch and on the training ground.
I wanted to get your views, Harry, on a few refereeing decisions, because for some people, perhaps some incorrect decisions made. There was a decision on Bukayo Saka where he felt like there was contact and went down, and in fact got a booking for diving. And also early on in the game, Socrates felt like he should have had a penalty. What were your views on those decisions? Do you feel like Arsenal were harshly done by last night?
I think Arsenal were harshly done by it in terms of the Socrates one. I think it was definitely pulled. I mean, we were in the stand behind the opposite goal, and we could see it from there in real time, that he had a whole handful of his shirt. So we could see that. So how the refs missed it, I don't know. And then secondly, what is the point in VAR if you're not going to correct those sorts of decisions? You know, it's such a clear foul, and they've just chosen to ignore it. And it's that inconsistency that's driving everybody mad at the moment. In terms of the Saka one, I've seen it again since, because there aren't any sort of screens or anything at Bramall Lane, so we had to wait till we got back to the hotel to watch it. But, you know, for me, it seems a little bit harsh, but I can see why he's put him. So I haven't got too many complaints about that one. But certainly in terms of the penalty shout, you know, Arsenal should have been given a penalty. And if you score the first goal, it's a completely different game. I know it's what ifs and things like that, but, you know, it's just unacceptable that at this standard, even with VAR, we're still seeing these mistakes.
One man that struggled for Arsenal last night yet again was Nicolas Pepe after his £72 million move from Lille. There was a lot of excitement from Arsenal fans about this player who'd been performing at a very high standard, in particular last season, had a very good year at Lille. Lots of clubs were supposedly interested in him. He's only scored one goal from Arsenal, and that was from the penalty spot against Aston Villa. What are your views on him? Do you think he's struggling to adapt to the pressures of the Premier League, and do you think that over time he will be able to adapt and show what is quite clearly a talented player, but a player that's just struggling for any confidence at the moment?
I think he is definitely struggling to adapt. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. I actually thought yesterday he was a bit more threatening than he has in recent weeks. And, you know, I think most of the Arsenal fans I spoke to after the game all kind of shared that opinion, which made it even more baffling when Henry decided to hook him to bring on Gabriel Martinelli, when, you know, Bukayo Saka was clearly out of his depth last night. The game was too physical for him. And Pepe had showed some threat, and I just, you know, I felt a little bit sorry for him yesterday, and I think he was victim of Emery's tinkering again. And, you know, maybe it is time to take Pepe out of the firing line for a couple of weeks and, you know, ease the pressure on him, because there is this immense pressure for him to develop, impact games from now. And it's becoming a bit of a problem, a bit of an ongoing theme. But for me, he was okay last night. He was probably one of our better players. I know that's not saying much, but for him to be hooked off, I thought was really, really harsh. And I thought it was another prime example of where Unai Emery is just on a completely different pace than supporters.
One man that wasn't even involved last night was Mesut Ozil, and it's kind of shocking, the statistics. Since joining Arsenal 6 years ago, he's missed 101 games and only really one serious injury in that time. Have all Arsenal fans now grown completely fed up with him? Are there any Arsenal fans left that still believe he can add quite a lot to this Arsenal side?
Yeah, I think there is. I think I'm certainly one of them that feels he can add to this side. I mean, it'd be interesting to know from that 100-whatever game how many of them have been since Unai Emery's arrived. Because I'd say that probably the majority has been under Unai Emery, because he, for some reason, just doesn't want this guy involved in his team. And, you know, he spoke, Ozil gave an interview last week, which he had an opportunity to have a real swipe at the manager. He didn't take it. He was very classy in what he said. And then Emery, the same day in his press conference, started talking about how he's seen an improvement in Ozil in training. So then why leave him out again? I mean, if Joe Willock's performance last night was nothing short of embarrassing, it was shocking. And I know he's a young player and, you know, inconsistencies are going to be there. But for me, if you're going to make a stand against Mesut Ozil and you're going to cut your nose off to spite your face and do what Unai Emery is doing, you better be getting the results. And he's not getting the results. his team from week to week has shown a real lack of creativity, and nobody is going to convince me that Mesut Ozil is not at least good enough to be on that bench. And that's where I'm really struggling. He says it's not personal. Ozil says it's not personal. Then what is it? Because there is obviously something more than we know. Because to leave him out based on his talent is nonsense. There's got to be something else going on.
Last night after the game, Arsenal manager Unai Emery said that he believed his side deserved more from last night's game. Do you feel like that was a fair reflection of the game and that Arsenal did deserve at least a point? Or despite kind of some of the decisions that maybe didn't go Arsenal's way based on the overall game and the chances created, that Arsenal didn't really on their performance deserve anything?
I don't think Arsenal deserved anything from last night's game. And, you know, people will argue that, you know, we had the majority of possession, particularly in that second half. Probably had a 10-minute period where we had Sheffield United pinned back on the edge of their box. And we looked like maybe getting an equaliser. But it's not just about possession. It's about making the possession count. It's about desire, passion. I thought that Sheffield United showed that in an abundance last night, and Arsenal just simply didn't. So I don't know what Unai Emery was watching, if that's what he thinks, but obviously he's going to defend his team. I didn't expect him to come out in a press conference and hammer his players. You know, often we make a lot out of those sort of comments, but for me, it is what I expected. It's kind of the, you know, the perfectly media-trained, you know, modern-day manager who says certain things and is very reluctant to veer away from the sort of narrative. He's going to try and dress it up. He's going to try and make it look like Arsenal were really unlucky last night. But in my opinion, that's just simply covering his own mistakes and his mistakes in terms of tactics, in terms of team selection, in terms of his approach from the very beginning. He set the wrong tone by picking the team he did. And you know, for me, he's just deflecting from the fact that, you know, it was a big mess up last night.
Arsenal fans saw the return last night off the bench of Alexandre Lacazette. Do you think that Emery will play both Lacazette and Aubameyang from the start of games? And how much have Arsenal missed Lacazette during this period that he's been injured?
I think we've missed Lacazette in the sense that, you know, as effective as Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is, he's not going to hold the ball up for you. He's not going to bring other players into the game. He doesn't necessarily play with his back to goal like Lacazette does at times. And the link-up between the two is very good. I think they will play in the Premier League going forward together. I think Aubameyang will operate from that left-hand side and Lacazette through the middle. And we have missed him, and we were all pleased to see him back. But ultimately, if there is no creativity in that midfield, then it doesn't matter who you've got up top, because if you're not providing them with service, you're not going to get the maximum out of them. And, you know, some of the midfield choices that Emery's made this season have been really, really baffling. You know, we've seen Guendouzi, Xhaka and Torreira start as a trio at times. He tried to throw Willock in there yesterday in the hope that he could provide a bit of spark. That didn't work. Ceballos ended up coming on. For me, until he gets that ever so crucial midfield balance right, it doesn't matter who plays up front, because we're just not going to create anywhere near enough chances. The importance of Lacazette and Aubameyang cannot be overstated. Those guys are so vital. And I dread to think where we would be and where we would have finished last season without the goals of those two.
And just finally, Harry, how frustrated are you that, yet again, we talked a few weeks ago about the Manchester United game being on a Monday night and then having a quick turnaround to the Europa League. Both sides on that occasion had Europa League football, that Arsenal play again on Thursday night against Vitória Guimarães in the Europa League. How annoyed are you that Arsenal have to play at 8 o'clock on a Monday night away from home, and then suddenly, not well, within exactly 72 hours later, they're back playing in the Europa League again?
Yeah, it's really frustrating from a fan's perspective. I think, you know, for me, this, you know, we're up in Sheffield at the moment. We're waiting for our train to come back. But it's a really difficult trip to make on a Monday night. There is no trains to get back after the game. So you end up having to give up essentially 2 days of work, which is difficult for a lot of people. You know, I'm fortunate that I'm in a position where this is my work and I get to come. But, you know, for others that had to drive back last night, it's really, really unfair. The game on Thursday is a bit of an issue, and I could see where you're coming from. And in an ideal world, it wouldn't be that we play on a Monday and a Thursday. But I think in Arsenal's case, we're in the fortunate position where we've got a squad to play a completely different team on Thursday. So it won't make too much of a difference. But, you know, in an ideal world, you don't want to be playing Monday away and then Thursday. It just isn't right. And it's, you know, what was wrong with playing this on the Sunday as the early game? You know, there was only one game on Sunday on Sky. What be wrong with playing this at 2 o'clock on Sunday. Make it easier for the fans to get back. Those who want to drive back can, without doing it at stupid o'clock. Get to work on a Monday and get on with your week. It just makes it so difficult. And when I look at the fixtures and the way they plan them out and the way the TV, rights obviously influence that, it just drives me crazy in it. But I guess it's a sign of modern day football, isn't it?
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Harry. That was Harry Simeon from the Chronicles of Aguna podcast.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, share your views on your club being involved in European action this week or just Premier League action, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Obviously, plenty of Champions League action to look forward to tonight. The first half of the first four groups are in action tonight, and then the second half are in action tomorrow night. Manchester City are in action tonight. They're one of two English sides in action. They take on Atalanta, who are obviously in their first season of Champions League football this season. They're currently third in Serie A, so they've made a decent start. The other English side in action tonight are Tottenham. They take on Red Star Belgrade at home at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And to look forward and to head to that one, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Flav from the Fighting Cock. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Flav. It was another kind of set of drop points for Tottenham on the weekend. A 1-1 draw, a late Dele Alli goal securing 1 point against winless Watford. Is it safe to say Tottenham got out of that game very, very lucky and were fortunate to even get a point from that game?
We deserved a point at least. I mean, second half we pretty much dominated. And obviously Watford are a very, very average team. And, it's a result that you should be kind of banking, really. It's just that we're just on a horrendous run of form and this kind of spirit and belief isn't really there at the moment. It could have actually been worse if you looked at the Vertonghen sliding tackle, which 99 times out of 100 you get a penalty for, and it went to VAR and they didn't give it. So we were lucky in that respect. But I think overall in the balance of play, we probably escaped with the right result.
Since the 23rd of February, Tottenham have a 29% win ratio. At any other top six club, I believe Pochettino would have got the sack. So why is Pochettino still in the job?
I think you're right. And I think he's still in the job because there are mitigating circumstances. And the things that the Spurs have gone through in terms of not being able to sign players, building this new stadium, has meant that Pochettino has been hamstrung somewhat. If he had spent a year ago and we were in that sort of situation, then 100% I think he'd be gone. But the fact is, we have now got this tired squad, an old squad that's been hearing the same messages over and over again, doing the same training regimes, and they're not reacting how they once did. That could fall on Pochettino as well, because it's his responsibility to motivate his players in any way that is possible, and the fact that he's failing to do that is a failing in his part. So, I can understand why people are starting to call for his head. The form isn't good enough. It hasn't been good enough for a long time. But let's give him another window or two and see where we're at. If it's not working in 12 months from now, then obviously he's not the man for the job. But to sack him when he really hasn't been given the tools to progress, it would be foolhardy, because he would go to someone else and do an incredible job.
Jamie Carragher said on the Monday Night Football last night that Tottenham have come towards the end of their cycle, and it wasn't necessarily a slight on Pochettino himself, because Carragher really, really rates Pochettino, says he's a fantastic manager, but that Tottenham could benefit from a new voice, someone new coming in, just freshening things up, because things can sometimes become a little bit stale if you don't freshen things up. So would, even though Pochettino is a very highly rated manager and a lot of people still maintain that, would this Tottenham squad, or potentially a very new looking squad in 12, 18 months time, benefit from someone else being there that's not necessarily meant as a direct dig at Pochettino?
Yeah, I don't think it's a dig at Pochettino. I think it's a fair thing to say, and that is essentially what's happening. And the quickest fix would be to replace Pochettino. If you want immediate results, then you would have to gamble on another manager, and that there's no guarantee that would improve things at all. I think the pragmatic and sensible way to look at it would be to look at the long game. Don't realize that that this season probably isn't going to end up in us qualifying for the Champions League unless something major happens. So let's just see it as a transition. Give him the money and the players in January and the summer next year, and we'll see where we are at this point next season. And my feeling, or this is where my head's at the moment, is that in time this can be remedied. It's just we're in this weird situation where the squad hasn't been refreshed. The players that we have brought in have been injured or are taking time to settle. So it's not time to pull the trigger yet, although in football that's typically what happens. The other thing, obviously, is that Pochettino signed a 5-year deal last year, and it's mooted to be around, still worth around £32 million. So Levy's not going to bin Pochettino for that price and then have to pay compensation for another manager who's in a job, or huge, you know, signing on fee for someone like Allegri, just to kind of hope that we would qualify for the Champions League. Because the cost of doing that, sacking Pochettino and getting his new manager in, would be about the same as the revenue that would come in from the Champions League. So you're kind of better off just sticking with what you got.
Do you think that some of the players have given up on Pochettino? Because usually towards the end of reigns, you see signs of some players starting to down tools against Bayern Munich. When the kind of fifth, sixth, seventh goals went in, it seemed like some of the Tottenham players were resigned to losing that game. In the Brighton game, that first goal after 2 minutes, Eric Lamella wasn't kind of breaking stride, wasn't trying hard enough to block the ball, and it was only the second minute of the game. It wasn't as if he was tired and exhausted and running out of steam. Do you feel like some of the players who are in the final year of their contract are starting to think about potentially moves away and therefore not giving 100% to the cause to potentially save Pochettino's job?
It's impossible to say. Maybe not. I can't see the logic from their perspective and from their agent's perspective in them downing tools, because it's going to, you know, other clubs are going to look at them and say, what's the mentality of these players? If Eriksen wants his move to Real Madrid, he's not going to get it playing the way he is, because Real Madrid are currently looking at him and saying, you know, he's had an excellent record, but if his mental attitude isn't right to play for Tottenham in the Premier League, is it going to be right to play at the Bernabeu? So I just think it's inertia. Like this, you mentioned the cycle. The best, biggest clubs in the world cycle their best players. You know, look at Alex Ferguson, how he got rid of major, big time players in that Man United side, because I think he realised that they're at the end of the line where he could influence their ability to play for Man United. So he got rid of them because he knew that a new, fresh head would be more responsive to his ideas. So I think it's just a human aspect. I haven't seen any of them not run. I haven't seen any of them... I mean, the Bayern Munich one, they did give up, but we were just so incredibly outplayed. It was almost not worth trying in the end. But I don't see that yet, to be honest.
A number of players over the last few years have left Tottenham. So you take Kyle Walker as the first example, went to Manchester City and has won back-to-back Premier League titles. Kieran Trippier left over the summer, obviously had an awful season. I mean, you think back to 18 months ago in the World Cup, he was one of England's best players, had an awful season last season, has gone to Atletico Madrid and is now back in the England squad. Obviously, from your point of view, you don't want to see the likes of Harry Kane leave, but does he need to start asking him serious questions in the next 6 to 12 months of, I look at Kyle Walker and he's won back-to-back Premier League titles, he's winning trophies, that a player of the quality of Harry Kane, that he needs to start thinking about if things aren't going to change and Tottenham aren't going to take that next step from being a top four side to a title-challenging team that can win many trophies, are those the types of players that need to be considering their futures?
Well, yeah. I mean, from a personal perspective, he could be considering his future. He might want to go and win trophies. But if you think of someone like Totti, who barely won a thing in his career, he is regarded as a complete legend at Roma. And in fact, probably worth more to him than a trophy that's ultimately won. If you're talking about Kyle Walker, the reason why he won 2 league titles is because he's part of a team that's cost £1 billion to assemble, or a club that's cost £1 billion to assemble. So, all right, he's gone off and played for the best team that had the best chance of winning it. I think if Kyle Walker won it with Tottenham, he wouldn't feel better about that achievement. And maybe that's what motivates Harry Kane. I don't know. I mean, obviously from a Spurs fan, and if he is a Spurs fan, he might be looking at that and thinking my legacy at this club and what these supporters think of me is more important than going to win a league title at a financially doped club. So I don't know. I mean, maybe most players do it, but you know, not perhaps Harry Kane isn't like that. But you know, if he did leave after 7 or 8 years of playing for Spurs, you couldn't begrudge it. He's given, you know, by that time would have given the most of his career to us.
Roy Keane said the other day that Manchester United should just go and buy Harry Kane. What sort of money would convince you to sell Harry Kane? Lots of people rate him as one of the best strikers in world football. Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in world football, even though they're in a pretty dire state at the moment. So would you, what type of price? Or would you say pretty much at any cost, unless Harry Kane forced through the move, you wouldn't sell him at any sort of price?
Well, you would if he become disruptive and didn't want to play, then you wouldn't want him at your football club, no matter how good he is. You know, that goes for all of the players that we sold. You know, you can't keep players that don't want to be there. The fact is, though, he's contracted to 2024, and I don't think there's a club in the world that can buy him without breaking FFP regulation. So I think he's completely priced out the market. I don't know how anyone would go about buying him. It would have to be in some sort of installment plan, or I don't know how they would do it without breaking their FFP, so I can't see him going anywhere really, even if he wanted to.
And just finally, Flav, looking ahead to tonight's game at home against Red Star Belgrade, Tottenham threw away a 2-goal lead in the first game to draw 2-2 away at Olympiacos, then the 7-2 drubbing at home against Bayern Munich. How important is it that Tottenham win this game? Because as Liverpool found out last season, going to Red Star Belgrade isn't easy at all, and if you're any kind of complacency gets into your game, that's where you can end up losing a game like that. So how crucial is tonight's game that it is 3 points and there is no budging from that?
Yeah, it is crucial, because going away there won't be easy. It's more than just the Champions League tonight. It's about getting back to winning ways and getting some belief, because I can't remember what it feels like to win a game. So it would be nice just to get a result. You'd think at home against Red Star, when they've got no fans, or they've got like 200 fans that are allowed in the stadium because of the racist chanting. So, you know, you'd think that this would be an excellent, you know, chance to get a win under our belt. But then we fought that against Watford. So who knows, mate? But it is really, really important. And, you know, hopefully we get over the line.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Flav. That was Flav from The Fighting Cock, giving his views on Tottenham. Obviously, they're in a bit of a pickle at the moment. And Flav giving his views there on Harry Kane, whether he needs to potentially leave going forward, and where Tottenham go from here, and how important a result it is, or in a game it is, for them tonight. Flav saying that it's not just for their Champions League hopes, but he said he'd forgotten what it's like to win a game. So Tottenham looking to get back on the winning trail. It's been a pretty horrendous, embarrassing few weeks for Spurs, hasn't it? You get knocked out of the League Cup by Colchester. You get smashed, absolutely annihilated, 7-2 against Bayern Munich. I didn't want to rub that in too much with Flav, although it was very tempting. And then 3-0 away at Brighton, where Tottenham weren't at the races. And they've come back off the back of the international break, and you're wondering about the resilience, the character of this side, that they would want to put in a kind of reactionary performance. That's what the Tottenham fans would have been expecting, and it didn't come. I thought Tottenham were extremely lucky to even get anything from that game. Gerard Deulofeu should have had an absolute stonewall penalty, which could have made it 2-0. Dele Alli's goal near the end, arguably, came off the arm. It came off the Premier League badge, which is on your arm. Therefore, it's with some of the goals that have been ruled out this season, that should have been ruled out as well. So Tottenham in a real pickle. And this game tonight, if they don't win this game, I think they can say goodbye to the Champions League group stages. Now, everyone said that 3 games into Tottenham's group stages last season, but they are in an absolute mess at the moment. They're in chaos. I don't think Pochettino will still be there by the end of the season, or sorry, by the end of the year, by Christmas, if I'm being honest. And also, I said it in that chat with Flav, if he was at any other top six side, with the run of form they've been on, 29% win ratio since the end of February, he'd have been sacked. Any other top six manager would have got the boot by now with that type of a win ratio. So everyone has sympathy for Pochettino, and to an extent I do. But with that type of a run, any other manager for a top six side would have got the axe. If you've got any views on that course on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to change tact a little bit, going back into one of the Premier League sides not involved in Europe this week, one of the newly promoted sides. So we're talking all things Norwich next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, share your views on your Premier League club, get in touch with us, course on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon to share your views. We've been talking about the Champions League. Obviously, two English sides now, so Manchester City take on Atalanta and Tottenham, as we were just talking about, take on Red Star Belgrade. We also reacted to Arsenal's defeat at Sheffield United last night. Sheffield United make a good start to life back in the Premier League. Another side that has been promoted from last season from the Championship into the Premier League is Norwich. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Michael Bailey, athletic reporter for Norwich. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Michael. Last time out, it was a 0-0 draw away at Bournemouth on the weekend. It was a game that I don't think anyone expected either side to keep a clean sheet, considering neither side had kept a clean sheet before that time. So it was a first clean sheet for the Canaries and also a first away point. How much will Daniel Farke take from that game?
Yeah, I think it's a huge boost in terms of just showing a bit of being resolute, really, on the road. I think Norwich had suffered three successive 2-0 defeats. And obviously before that was Liverpool, which although they rallied in the second half, the game was kind of over by then. So I think just in terms of Norwich showing that their ability to kind of grow up, I suppose, and adapt to their new surroundings, it was really important. Daniel's got a pretty good track record of being able to solidify teams if you take it back to when he was in Germany and in his first season at Norwich. So if he can, there's promising signs that it looks like he can start to try and follow that path again. It's going to need Norwich to keep tweaking and keep evolving from where they were at Bournemouth, because I think Bournemouth were probably lackluster and there are elements of the way Bournemouth play that probably suited Norwich to a degree as well. So how Norwich can evolve it over the coming weeks will be quite important to them, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
In general then, for Norwich, 9 games in, so still very early doors, only the 7 points. Obviously the highlight was that win against Manchester City at home. The problem has been the defence, as was intimated by the fact that was only their first clean sheet of the season. 21 goals conceded. Only Watford have conceded as many or more as them. They've also conceded 21. Is it just kind of too easy to point to the injuries, or is that a very feasible argument as to why Norwich defensively have conceded so many goals?
I think it's probably too simplistic to break it down into one thing in terms of just saying that their defence hasn't been very good, because I think the injuries have really impacted in certainly their holding midfield options. I think that's been a major issue over the recent weeks. And of course, they have lost half of their centre, or three of their 4 centre-backs, basically. So you can't deny that that's clearly had an issue as well. But Norwich have actually kind of struggled to score goals in recent weeks too, although they've, you know, probably created one or two decent chances, but probably not as many as they would have liked. So I think there's I think Daniel Farke is really trying to find a balance, and they actually did create some half decent moments at Bournemouth, but nothing really clear cut. And I think that will be a worry. I still think that these three players in support of Timu Pukki are not really contributing enough sort of big chances and real sights of goal to take the pressure off him providing the goals for Norwich. So I think that all factors into the fact that then, you know, Norwich, by the same token, are slipping behind, and they have been conceding chances in transition when they've been trying to build a possession game up at the other end of the pitch. So there are all sorts of issues that Daniel's had to firefight while still being incredibly restricted in terms of changing personnel or finding a few different options. And I think that's why the international break just gone was so important, because there was a noticeable change in terms of having more players back. Someone like Anel Hernandez, who hasn't been available since the opening game, he's probably the only natural out-and-out pace pacey forward that they've got that can really give them a different dynamic when they attack. And I think just in the last 10, 15, 20 minutes of him being on the pitch at Deeme Court on his return, you could see how much of a difference that made in terms of Norwich's attacking dynamic. That's one positive. Obviously, in terms of centre-backs, there's not much they can do, really. I think Christoph Zimmermann might be back possibly come the end of November, December time, if all goes well and there's a fair wind. Having Alex Tetti and Tom Tribal both available now as holding midfielders, I think that's a major boost. And there's no getting away from the positive impact both those players had at various intervals at Bournemouth. And again, come Sunday, a Man United's visit, I think that will be interesting to see if that offers us the same improvement for Norwich, because it's worth pointing out that Alex Tetti was a key player in that victory over Manchester City, and after that he wasn't really available.
Looking ahead then to Norwich's next fixture, it's on Sunday afternoon at home at Carrow Road against Manchester United. Even though United are in a pretty dire state at the moment, only in 14th, 2 points above the relegation zone at this moment in time, it's obviously still a massive game against a massive club. Will Norwich be looking to kind of channel what they did against Manchester City? They're obviously City rivals in Sunday's game, and being at home, be able to create that atmosphere, an intimidating atmosphere, making it as difficult as possible for Manchester United and hopefully for Norwich fans, buoying them to a win on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels a bit early in the season to have a relegation six-pointer, doesn't it? But I guess that's what it is. I jest. But I think, Norwich set the template for anything they want to do in the Premier League against Manchester City, both in terms of on the pitch, how clinical they were in attack, which I think was a really key point. But also, again, they were very resolute and concentrated defensively that night. The atmosphere inside Carrow Road was incredible. And there's no doubt some of those things will happen naturally, albeit it is a Sunday kickoff, so people might still be a bit dozy after the lunches. We'll have to see, but I think, yeah, when United are in town, I think it goes for any team across the country, really. It's a big draw, whether they're, you know, really struggling and looking completely out of sorts, or whether they're flying. I think, you know, despite where United are, they will still be huge favourites to come to Norwich and sweep them aside, because of the various talented players they've got. Even at half speed, you know, they can still beat teams who are struggling if Norwich aren't on it. I mean, Norwich have got a lot to prove, because the last time their fans saw them, they got smashed 5-1 by Aston Villa. So you'd like to think Norwich won't be doing anything other than going full pelt at it. It was a really good point for United against Liverpool, quite clearly, and they'll be keen to see that, as much like Norwich, really. Both clubs, and they've had similar injury problems, I guess, but both clubs had performances at the weekend which they considered to be building blocks. So from that point of view, looking at how United went about it against Liverpool, it's hard to see that they would feel they could do the same travelling to a newly promoted side. And I think that will be fascinating, because Norwich will probably want to invite United on and see if they can take them on the counter, if they press at the right times, and if they're as clinical going forward. So I think Norwich has certainly got the template that could cause United problems, but let's not get away from who the real favourites are and who should be winning this game.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Michael. That was Michael Bailey, the Athletic reporter for Norwich. Norwich's next game is on Sunday at home at Carrow Road, a 4:30 kickoff. Norwich take on Manchester United.
This is Love Sport.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.